Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. And Shay, it is Tuesday afternoon, and it's time for our Mailbag Podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Grooving. 3-1 on the year. It feels weird. I did a top five. I ranked the transfers. There's nine total. Yeah. But I let off saying four of the 12 games are complete, and people were already a little sad on the board. A third of the season that you wait for all year is already in the book. So soak it in. That's what I'm doing. We're soaking it in right now. The mailbag, we're going to beat an hour today. I'm confident.
We should. We should.
People did not ask a lot of double questions.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of trolling. I'm very happy with everybody right now.
Yes. Yes. So we should be able to get in and give pretty good answers to each one of these. So thank you all for sending your questions. If you want to send a mailbag question in the future, just be on the board, be on the message board, Bengal Tiger on three. If you're not subscribed over there, become a subscriber. We appreciate everybody who is. And obviously our community is huge, and we talk to them every day, like 24/7, basically. So it's a lot of fun, but we can just jump right into it. If you're
sign up. If you're not signed up for the Bengal Tiger, do it.
Yes.
Catch up. Right. You'll know what all your friends are talking about because they're all on there. Trust me.
Yes.
Everyone's lurking. But yeah, shout out to all the new members. Really, we do really appreciate it. And some big news coming soon to the Bengal Tiger. By way of not like recruiting, just big site news. So check it out. All right, you want to dive in? The mailbag questions as presented by Maddie B each week. Onto the board, people get their questions in, then they get mad at Matthew for locking the thread before they realize it. So make sure you're on the Bengal Tiger. Maddie B, what's your range now? You'll go Monday evening or Tuesday morning.
Exactly. Right. Monday evening. And then if I forget, then it's Tuesday morning. Like I was playing basketball yesterday.
Monday evening, check in. If not, Tuesday morning, check in.
So I was watching Jaden and Joe play football yesterday. So I was not remembering to post for questions on the board, but that is our first question.
That's called a segue in the biz. The very first question is who's the GOAT, Jaden or Joe? And he also adds, in an alternate universe, if Joe played on the 2023 team and Jaden played on the 2019 team, would they both still be Heisman winners? But for those that didn't know the specifics of it, or maybe just didn't keep track, Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow matched up in Monday Night Football. It was the first game, and I think someone had responded since 1940 with no turnovers and no punts. So every drive beyond kneeling it out was a score of some variety, minus the Bengals missing a field goal, which actually proved pretty costly into how the game played out. But your rookie Jaden Daniels, Matty B, 21 for 23 for 254 and 2. He also rushed for 39 and a touchdown. That's 293 and 3 total touchdowns. Burrow, 29 of 38, 324 and 3 touchdowns. That's 328 total yards and 3 touchdowns. Daniels is the first Commanders quarterback ever to hit more than 90% of his passes in a game. He becomes the first rookie to do it. Boy, what a showing it was for Jaden Daniels and Burrow, who played excellent. The Bengals can play no defense. Washington isn't far behind in that category.
Yeah.
But for what LSU fans wanted to see, which was their two quarterbacks, their two Heisman winners face off for the first time, that's literally beyond overtime about as good as it can get.
What's the last time two LSU quarterbacks have faced each other? I mean, I'm sure it's not that long ago because obviously, you know, Flynn and Russell played a little bit, I guess. And you can go back. I'm sure I'm missing plenty in this time period, but it just feels significant to me. And obviously to have two of this caliber in the NFL is getting to where we've talked about over the past 5-6 years of LSU developing the quarterback position at a high level. So yeah, it was awesome to see these two go at it. I think both of them, even Joe with his slow start, obviously last night had what 300 plus yards, 3 touchdowns, really good game from him. And then Jaden Daniels, just I watched Jaden's first game of his career, and it was a lot of just, you know, looking to run, trying to get comfortable, but he was still like completing passes at a high level. And then last night he just unleashed the deep ball that we all like saw him develop over his time at LSU. And it was phenomenal to watch because he's got Terry McLaurin out there. He's got a couple playmakers and he just lets it rip and he's awesome. So yeah, fun game. Jamar also had a big game in there as well. So I know cause he's on my fantasy team. So yeah, good day for LSU all around, between those two. The GOAT, I guess, to answer the question, I mean, Joe has the championship. He was on the better team, obviously. So I guess, you know, that tilted, I guess, in most people's opinion. But ultimately, it's the
Joe was also breaking a bunch of records his rookie year.
Yes.
And took his team to a Super Bowl already. So,
yes.
I thought they made a good point on the broadcast that Jaden said he didn't like being at LSU when everything was about, well, Joe did this, Joe did that, Joe did this, Joe did that. And he felt like by the time he left and won a Heisman that they could very much differentiate, fans could, the two of them as players individually. That's what I think makes us like, who's the GOAT? They're just totally different players to me.
Yeah.
Like if they were both pocket passers who just sat back there and put up numbers, I could say, oh, I like this guy a little more than this guy, but they do different things completely.
And that's what makes, obviously, the second part of the question of, you know, if Joe played on 2023 and Jaden was on 2019, obviously hypotheticals are difficult. I think the question was, do you think they both still win the Heisman? I think the answer is yes, because I think Joe's passing numbers would have been outrageous. And Jaden would have done what he did, right? He would have had phenomenal passing numbers and then also would have ran the ball around for a lot.
Anyone who would have been quarterback on that 19 team out of those two would have won the Heisman.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not worried. Like, I think they both still win the Heisman. Like, the 2023 part is maybe the little bit more of a question because Jaden had to run so much. But I think Joe
with two first round receivers, though.
Joe was so ahead of his time, not ahead of his time, but like seasoned as a passer that I can't see him like struggling at all in that 2023 season. So, and plus he would have had to score a lot because again the defense wasn't good, so we know what it is.
Yes, I actually do think they would have won both years. I think his numbers would have still been better than Penix and Nix or whomever else was in the race. It was
Penix, Nix, we're missing somebody,
the Arizona wide receiver played at Ohio State.
Oh yeah, Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison, no, he's definitely winning it.
So yes, I think that both of them would have won. Coach K, 7, asked, we said gutsy win by the Tigers, strong second half against UCLA. Finally saw versus Southern Cal that Nagel's in the box with Sloan since Baker's in the field.
South Carolina, I think.
Oh, yeah. South Carolina East. Oh, we said East. South Carolina. Nagel's in the box with Sloan. That was when Sloan was yelling on the headsets. Since Baker's on the field, they've not shown the defensive box. Would it be Peoples and Olsen up there? Just curious. Yes, I do think Peoples and Olsen are both up there. I'd have to double check.
That's what I understand.
I don't see them on the sidelines, though.
No, because Davis sidelines, Baker sidelines. Who am I missing?
Yeah, so it would make sense that your other – Corey's on the sidelines. So
Corey's sideline.
It would make sense that your other guys are up there.
Yeah.
But actually, I'll pay more attention to that this week. Also heard Coach Kelly – but he said – heard Coach Kelly say last week, define the blue zone and white zone, thought it was an interesting concept. Through 4 games, we have not been at a loss for different schemes in these areas while Sloan is trying a lot of things. Just wondering when we will see one of those fall practice jump ball passes to Pimpton or Green. Green did get him. He was wide open, so it didn't need to be a jump ball. But thoughts, I guess, really, you talked about this blue zone, white zone. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think in general, the red zone, for those wondering, the blue zone is within the 5, white zone's within the 10, red zone's within the 20. That's how Brian Kelly and the offense classifies all that. Ultimately, the red zone offense has not been where we wanted it to be. I think a lot of that, like we talked about, has been because of the lack of Jaden Daniels' legs and trying to figure out, all right, if we can't run the ball for short yardage, in short yardage situations consistently, then you have to get creative with the passing, and Nussmeier's legs aren't really a factor at this point. So you have to be really, really precise when you're inside the 20 or inside the 10, and they haven't really been that to this point. So I think, and I've maintained this throughout the season to this point, is Mason Taylor's been awesome, but it's when you get to Kamori Pimpton and Tre'Davious Green, like as blockers, they're not they're not threats at all right now. So I do wonder if that limits how much they get on the field and how much they want to play them instead of, like, you know, an Aaron Anderson who's playing awesome, Kyren Lacy, Xavion Thomas, who's obviously versatile. Like, you have so many receivers that do a lot of things well in those situations. And CJ Daniels is also a huge target as well. So it's not like they're small. That I wonder how much they're weighing that against, you know, using tight ends in terms of Pimpton and Green, who can't really block. So it's like they're more so just receivers, and you already have a lot of really good receivers. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. That makes perfect sense. I think too, though, that their red zone has gotten better. Look, they've gone to the red zone 20 times, 17 of them. They've come away with scores. Obviously, Matty B, what you want to see is touchdowns, right? Well, they have 13 touchdowns to 4 field goals. So sitting at about 65% on the pretty touchdowns, yeah, and 85% on scoring. If you look at a year ago with Jaden Daniels, they were at 90% on scoring and 75% on touchdowns. So going down there 65 times like a year ago and scoring 49 touchdowns, that's a really high mark. I mean, God, look at the 2019 team when they went down there 75 times into the red zone. They scored 72 times and 79% were touchdowns. So
yeah,
in Heisman seasons, you're hitting 75, 79 with really generational type quarterbacks who ended up as number one and two picks who start in the NFL. I think that as Nuss Meyer is making his fifth start, you know, this past week, and
yeah,
this offense get a feel for it, that where they're at isn't terrible at all. 17 of 20 and 65% being touchdowns. If you can up that number, even in hitting 70, you're in a really good spot relative to where the best offenses in school history were.
Yeah. And obviously one of those stops was the first game, first possession. And another one was South Carolina at the one, basically with three snaps. And
what's which one is inside the five? White?
Yeah. No, blue. Sorry.
Blue. That's where they seem hesitant to me, because at least across those first couple of weeks, few weeks, right, Matty B, that they looked nervous to run the football. Like, they were, you know, they're going shotgun at the one at night. Yeah. It's like they don't feel they can pound it. They were going with that power T look where, you know, you had three guys lined up, including Relaford, a true freshman D lineman in the middle. So they didn't seem overly confident that they could get the push and make these plays. And if they can kind of grow in that area, then I think that number goes up.
Yeah.
We've talked about that. It almost feels like it's easier when you're 10 yards out than 2 yards.
Yeah,
out.
You have more space. No, for sure. For sure.
But that shouldn't be the case. You should be able to run it in from a yard or two away, right? Like, exactly. I'm not crazy for thinking that.
No, for sure. And I do think, you know, the Will Campbells and Garrett Dellingers, and we'll see if DJ Chester, how he continues to progress. I think they'll be okay running the ball. The problem now becomes, obviously, after South Alabama, is you start playing better defenses in general. You know, Ole Miss has Walter Nolan and guys like that. You know, go down the list of the teams on the schedule, and it gets challenging. So,
Capital City Tiger said that he doesn't need to ask any football questions. He says his opinion's more correct than 90% of the people out there on the board. So, obviously, he's in jest here. But he says no one ever wants to know how we're doing. We did an AMA about a month ago on the board, but he says hope's all's well. How are we doing? You asked that to start, though, Matty B. So that's good on you. You asked
me
how
I'm doing.
How are you doing, Matty B?
Check in on Shay sometimes. You know,
I'm good. Don't worry about me. I'm making everything happen behind the scenes. When you don't see me, I'm making something happen. said you played basketball last night. Did you win?
It was just pickup.
Well, that counts. Somebody wins, right?
It does count.
Did you get picked up? Did you get to run?
Yeah, I got picked up. I think I won 2 out of 4. Something like that. So good little run. And then I'll play tennis this week. So I just kind of go back and forth between those two.
For the if LSU is 2-4 right now, would you say that's good? It was good.
No, I won 2 out of 4. So I'm 2-2. I went 2-2, 2-2. So
if LSU is 2-2 right now, that'd be good.
No.
Matty B, step it up. But these might not be your, are you the,
I was going to say I'm
ranked where you're 1 through 5 importance to
important.
The
important. I'm usually like 3. Usually I'm not the best player on the team. Usually I'm usually like the Steve Nash, you know, I need like an Amari Stoudemire on my team, or I need a good big usually on my team. That helps a lot, but yeah, I'll set the table. and then hit some threes and go from there.
So just to sum it up statistically, from a math perspective,
yes,
you're middle of the road on a middle of the road team.
Something like that. Something like that. Something solid. Like that, you know, just a solid better be, player. Solid
better
player.
Than being the and you got picked up in all
I'm
four.
Definitely
games
not a liability by any means on either end here. I'm holding my own no matter who it's against. High level, that's, mid level. So I remember at North Texas back at the North Texas rec days, which I can go on about for a long time, but it was like it'd be football players and then it'd be like a couple UNT basketball players there.
Oh, yeah, and you're lucky you wasn't at LSU and you had all the football players coming through the rec jamming on everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, it was the similar concept. I was just going up and down, just feeding left and right. So good times, good times.
You need some run with Trey Dez Green. If he gets off the McMahon's roster at any time, bring him over to wherever.
Bengal Tiger pickup run coming to a town near you, coming to a park near you very soon.
That's right. So if any of y'all are into basketball, find Matty B at the local gym. He's he's a solid player. He's a 3 of 5.
There you go. There you go.
But he did say JD5. Well, who was more important? JD5 to the 2023 team. So a year ago, Daniels, or Burrow 19. I think almost the default answer has to go to the defense was so bad that Daniels was more important. Like, I'm not sure if they would have won 6 games last year without Daniels.
Like, and obviously, like, we talk about, like, even if you just replace Daniel with a solid quarterback, like, I think Nussmeier is above average, but, like, if you replaced him with a, I mean, I don't want to say Max Johnson because that's going kind of far down, but, like, a Miles Brennan, Max Johnson, if you replace Jaden Daniels.
Hey, Miles
like,
Brennan is over 1,000 yards in 3 games.
Miles Brennan could play. Miles Brennan could play. But if you replace Jaden Daniels with Miles Brennan, that team last year is going at best 7-5. Absolute best 7-5.
Yeah.
Like, I think he still throws for a lot of yards, but it's just completely different.
But if you put Miles Brennan in on that 2019 team, I think they're still winning a lot of games because they had a lot of talent.
Yeah. You're still winning a lot of games there because the defense could get some stops sometimes too. So, and they blew out obviously everybody on their freaking schedule for the most part. So,
Well, I do want to, I want to mention this real quick. We've talked about it a few times, but the Money Game on Amazon Prime, Matty B, you got to go out and watch women's basketball. It was their first open practice of the fall. You got to watch what Kim Mulkey's new team looked like. You've called it before, perhaps the deepest team she's had during her time at LSU. They've already won a national championship already. Made it into what? Elite Eight last year? Where did the
run Elite end? Eight.
Yep. Elite Eight. But this could be their deepest team, most talented, we'll see. But you get a good glimpse of the team from a year ago, and really Flauge, who's still in the team, and Angel Reese in the Money Game, which Amazon put out and has been a hit, a big success really so far. Six-part docuseries, a lot of LSU fans are talking about it right now and then nationally. But it's on Amazon Prime. If you have it, go on, watch it for free. You can click the link below here if you're watching on YouTube. If not, get on Amazon Prime, just search The Money Game. It'll probably pop up. It's one of the trending videos. But they went all access behind the scenes at LSU. It is cool to see first Angel Reese and Flauge, a lot of behind the scenes views of the women's team. Obviously Livy Dunn is right up there as the kind of the leader of the NIL era in terms of kind of a face to a college athlete who went out and earned a bunch of money and sort of managed to balance that with being a part of a team that just won a national championship in gymnastics at LSU. Shaq produced it. Jaden Daniels, we've talked about, obviously coming off his big game, you get to see a lot of what he was going through during the season that ultimately ended with him winning at Heisman. So if you have not checked it out yet, it is awesome. The Money Game on Amazon Prime, about just ushering in this NIL era into college athletics with the focus being on LSU. And it is so behind the scenes, so many different vantage points that we would never get to see if they didn't have this documentary crew come down to Baton Rouge and follow everybody around and get sort of unprecedented access. So check it out. Money Game, Amazon Prime, link below in the YouTube video, but also just get on Amazon Prime and search it and watch it now or put it in your library and watch it when you have time and weigh in. We've got a thread on the board about it where everybody sort of chimed in with their thoughts. So shout out to them. They put together a really, really good doc. Let's roll. Here's the next one in the mailbag. JM7409. Ooh, I like this. Who will be wide receiver one in 2025? So next year, hot takes are encouraged. You will not have Kyren Lacy anymore. I believe CJ Daniels.
CJ's done.
Final year.
CJ's done. This is year five for him, I think.
Okay. So your options here are obviously the young guys on the team. And let me see. Anderson will be back. Xavion Thomas will be back. Chris Hilton will be back. Kyle Parker will be back. Then you've got this wave. I mean, you have the guys, Shelton Sampson, Kylan Billiott, Jelani Watkins. Yeah. I may be missing somebody.
No, I think you got them all.
In there of guys who are kind of active and healthy right now.
Yeah.
But that'd be the group.
We're going to assume it's not a true freshman. Yeah, as much as we like the wide receiver commits that they have. That's the group. And then obviously, I guess if you just want to go down the list and fill in the answer for none of the above and just pick a transfer, like there's,
you're going transfer.
That's the first thing I thought of, was they're going to just go hunt the best receiver possible in the transfer portal and go pick him out and just go get it. Because whether it's Nussmeier quarterback, whether it's Bryce Underwood a quarterback, whether it's a transfer quarterback, I do think you need to go get a top end receiver here. That's not a slight to anybody here, but because I actually like, obviously, Hilton, Parker, Xavion, Aaron. Like, that's a really good group, but you still, I think, need to replace a Lacy and Daniels, honestly. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they went and got whoever the best receiver in the portal is. They're probably just going to go get him.
I'll go Aaron Anderson. I mean, he's proven right now, coming off of two injuries at Bama and LSU, that he can catch five, six balls a game. He's at 300 yards through four games. He is sure-handed with it, and I think his confidence is obviously increasing. If he has a big year this year, it's just going to go through the roof. Now, I know he's a smaller guy. He doesn't fit that mold of, like, oh, wide receiver one, this big outside receiver who's 6'4 and can go make plays all over. I just think that when you look at it at season's end, he could lead you certainly in yards per catch. He's at like 15 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And could put up 800 yards, something in that range, if not more. So I'll go Aaron Anderson.
Yeah, I think if I was saying of the group of LSU players we were presumed to return, I would probably go Hilton. Just because, kind of like a default almost, just because I think he would almost have to be it at this point. If we don't assume Parker, you know, surpasses him or anything like that. But if not, yeah, Aaron Anderson's a good pick.
All right, where are we at on this? Next question from Knight95. He said, do you think if Nussmeier declares for the NFL draft, do you think he does? And if so, which range do you think he'll go in? You want me to go first or you? Because I think I've got two trains of thoughts here.
Yeah, I mean, I like we talked about last podcast. I do think he does declare at the end of the day. I just think the numbers are going to be really, really high. And I think he'll get in this draft class. He's going to be a top five quarterback at the very least. You know, we talked about Shador, Quinn, and Cam Ward are probably the top three. And so after that, I think Nussmeier very well could be in that conversation and pushing, you know, maybe to be in that top three. But so ultimately, I do think he declares because I think he's going to put up incredible numbers. And then what range, I think that would probably put him in the 15 to 30 range, back half of the draft, assuming that those three would go in the top 10. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks like this past year, right? People reach on Michael Penix. People reached on Bo Nix. Like, they both went top 12, 13. And so I honestly think Nussmeier has a very good shot at going in the top 20 and kind of going from there. If he continues the stats that he's putting up right now, a third of the way through the season, he's still on pace for what, 3,600 yards and however many touchdowns. And, you know, he still has not turned the ball over the way that we were concerned that he was going to.
I'm going to be in the camp that says he does not turn pro. Now, that's what my gut told me going into the season. I said he would need to have a monster year. Now, he's having an excellent year stat-wise, right? Here's my thing, and it's very situational for me. Garrett Nussmeier started 5 games ever. His dad is someone who, in Doug Nussmeier, who is still coaching right now. Right now he's with the Eagles, so he's coaching Jalen Hurts as quarterback's coach. But he was with the Chargers with Herbert. He was with the Cowboys forever. Gosh, it felt like at least 5-6 years in that stretch. Coached quarterbacks as well with Dak. At a number of colleges, including Bama, when Bama and Saban beat Brian Kelly for the BCS National Championship. I guess that was the 2012 season, but 2013 would have been when that game was played. But A.J. McCarron was his quarterback. So, and he also, look, Doug played in the NFL, Doug played in the CFL, all that. I think that with that comes a knowledge of, hey, look, here's what you need before you go pro. And I just wonder if reps aren't up there. Experience. Like, he has played five, he started 5 games. By the end of the year, he'll started 13, 14. I don't know if they go to the playoffs or whatever. We'll see. But, you know, 12, 13, 14 games. That's not a ton. All right. And now, look, quarterbacks have gone pro off of just a 1-year starter. Sure. I don't wonder if the range is projected to be similar or if he can up it, that just coming back makes sense. There wasn't a thought leading into the season that he was going to leave unless he had some amazing year. Now, look, if he gets put ahead of Beck and Ewers or Sand, you know, these guys, when it comes time for real breakdowns of who these guys are going to take, then yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you go pro? If you're thought to be a top 3 pick, you'll be a first rounder in the top 15. I also just know that next year's class is so much deeper that it'll be tougher then to be considered one of the top 3 or 4 guys because there's a lot of good quarterbacks that are going to come out next year.
Yeah, like, and I didn't include
one, but the next one.
Yeah, and I did not include Beck in that. I think I don't know. I just from what I've seen from Beck this year, it's been kind of up and down. But again, we'll have to see. I think also
if he's not a first round pick, he should not come out this year.
That's fair. That's very fair. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Also, we have to see Nuss go against the SEC stretch that he's about to go up against, right? The 7-game stretch after South Alabama, where you play the Ole Miss, Alabama, go down the list of teams, Arkansas, Florida, so-and-so. Like, you're going to have to continue to maintain this level. And so there's a real question of, is he going to do this? Does he start to panic? Does he start to press, you know? Ultimately, I think Nuss is going to have a great year, but it's still a question mark moving forward.
Yeah, I think he's going to lean on his dad for advice here because that's about, and look, the coaches, Sloan, everybody else, but you're not going to get someone who knows the ins and outs of being an NFL quarterback and dealing with them and what you need to know and what how kind of where you need to be at in terms of your progression as a quarterback. I mean, look, he still has a lot of growth to do as a quarterback, even a projection of, oh, he could be a top 5 quarterback taken. He's got to grow his game a lot. That's not to say he hasn't been really good, but yeah, he can make NFL throws, but he can definitely continue to grow his game and be even better. So too early for me to know for sure which way that one is going, but I lean coming back still.
Yeah.
NolaFan said, what do we think about Kyren? The pace for the regular season, he said, would be 60 catches, 730 yards and 15 touchdowns. Beyond the touchdowns, he said, if you tell people that before the season, it might have come with a kind of tinge of disappointment. How do you look at these first 4 weeks? Because I think as much as maybe those touchdowns can inflate it a little bit, so can that yardage. He could go out and have a 100-yard game that now he's trending for much more. I just think that after week one, every team is like, all right, we're about to put 2 guys on him.
Yeah, I think Kyren is by far like the clear number one for LSU. So teams, and there's not that like Brian Thomas to really balance things out. But ultimately, I think Nussmeier has a very clear comfort with Mason Taylor and Aaron Anderson and guys like that, to where he hasn't felt the need to force the ball to Kyren Lacy. And they have this receiver group is so much deeper than last year's. So it doesn't shock me at all that Lacy maybe isn't having a huge statistical year to this point, but I'm not really concerned about him. I still think he ends the year with over like 800 yards. He'll probably end up close to, if I had to guess, probably close to like 900 yards to maybe even 1,000. And I think his best football is still ahead of him.
This next one, he asks every year, same NOLAFAN33, but once a year he'll ask this, and he lays it all out. 2019 players from that great defense and offense, but that were not first rounders. So take five or six off that. So you don't get to pick any of them. Who would you take off that team to put on this team in the hope that it would really help, you know, and benefit in a major way? Identifying the weakest position, right?
This is easy for me, yeah.
Who is it?
It's Grant Delpit.
I think it's probably that's what he said would be the maybe presumable.
Oh, answer. I didn't even finish reading his answer. There you go. Yes.
It's got to be a DB.
Yeah.
I'm not going to knock Christian Fulton out of that conversation. I think Fulton was an excellent college player, and he would easily be their best DB they have on the team right now. So Delpit, lucky one, Delpit and Fulton, I think, are your choices.
Cordell Flott and Jay Ward would help a lot.
You can go to Cordell Flott and Jay Ward and say they would be the best player on the defense too. So honestly, I mean, even Jacoby Stevens, Kerry Vincent, every single one of those guys would start for LSU right now.
Yes.
With ease.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
anybody from the 2019 any of those DBs. That played DB that was not taken in the first round, I would take.
Yeah, me too.
But I would put Fulton or Delpit up there as first.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good answer. Good question, as always.
Thomas W. Asked, why does Zach Taylor still have a job? So this is going to be our college to NFL crossover here. Bengals, people who follow Burrow or even Bengals fans, I guess, are not happy with Zach Taylor.
They're never happy with him.
No.
Well, except for the year they made the Super Bowl.
They were happy that year until they lost. Zach Taylor, though. I don't know how much you even pay attention to it. You're a Zach Taylor fan. Do you think he's a good coach?
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not privy enough. I don't watch enough Bengals games. Like, I've watched Bengals games, like, last night and stuff, but I'm not breaking down coaching decisions the way that I do with teams that I follow. But in general, Zach Taylor's been there for a good amount of time, and now they're 0-3, so you wonder how long it will continue if they continue to lose games. Like, if they go 7-10 this year, is that the end? I don't know. He's been there for a while, so we'll see. It was just, honestly, going into the year, and this is from me having Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase on the same, on my fantasy, like, dynasty team, I was really worried because they didn't practice. Like, there was that whole thing with Joe, and then with his wrist, and then Ja'Marr holding out for a while. And so you're like, okay, this just feels not right. And sure enough, now they're 0-3. So I don't know. I'm sure Zach Taylor gets blamed, but it's just like,
Super Bowl, and they've gone to an AFC championship, and they were absolutely awful before then. So, like,
yeah,
Joe and Ja'Marr and T and all those guys certainly help, but I don't know. I think people's frustration is probably he calls plays, doesn't he? So
I believe that's what a lot of people,
you know, Cliff Kingsbury's not the head coach for the Commanders, and Dan Quinn is, but, you know, you've got a guy who's known for calling plays and makes Jaden look very good. I think people have some issues probably with Zach Taylor being the head coach and the play caller, and then he's got a little bit more room there to kind of grab blame or at least take blame whenever things go wrong on offense, because he's with the head coach and he's basically steering the ship there. So I don't know. We'll see. I'll tell you this. They'll choose Joe Burrow over Zach Taylor. Want to bet? So when it comes time for someone to go, it will be the head. It'll be the head coach and OC.
Yeah.
But he said, does Hilton finally play this week? I don't think so. Why? Now, you could be in a shootout here.
Yeah, what if they need him?
Sure, but then you've got to have somebody else that can step up then.
I agree. I agree.
Buy him two more weeks, because you got a bye week after this before Ole Miss. He's more valuable to you in an Ole Miss shootout than a South Alabama shootout.
Yes.
So I would not play him this week, even if you were 90%.
I agree. The argument, again, barring he's 120%, and there's no concern of re-injury at any point, then you can play him. But barring that, I think most people would be like, well, you know, you want to get him on the field to get some game reps in, because there were already questions coming into the year about, you know, the technical side of being a receiver that he had. So now if you just throw him back out there, how polished is he going to be? Which I think is fair, but you kind of just need him healthy. You need him to be able to run and cut at a high level in order for him, for his play style to even be valuable right now. And so South Alabama, you know, we saw Kyle Parker catch a go. I think the overall speed of the receiver position is still a concern, but ultimately you're, again, three touchdown favorites here against South Alabama. You should be able to win this game without him. And then you get to Ole Miss, and that's going to be, I mean, it's not your season, but for playoff sakes, like, it might be your season. Like, you might need to win that game
lose that game, you can't lose another.
Yeah, you probably got to be perfect. So again, it's not your season, but it's going to feel like your season whenever the game is being played. So, you know, at home, off a bye week, Ole Miss playing like seven straight games, like, this is a big game. So all gear, everything has to be geared towards that game. So if Hilton has an ounce of pain or an ounce of discomfort, he probably should not be on the field.
I agree with you. Go Tigers 5280 said, going to hit you with a little offense defense. All right, a little 1-2 punch coming. Defense, do you think Blake Baker sticks with the 4-3 with the Weeks brothers and Penn on the field? Or does he go to the 4-2-5, which will be back to the star position? He does say, side note, because I'm cheating, can Pert take a medical red shirt? He could, but I don't – that would then – that's no different than just coming back for your senior year. Like, if he came back, he's not staying two more years.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're getting 5 years of Harold Perkins here.
I would think that, no, I mean, he could. Yes, in theory, that's what will happen. But
I hope for his sake,
if he came back, he would only stay one more year, because you would hope he'd get healthy and then he'd go pro.
Yeah, but for his sake.
For his sake, no doubt. I think the answer to the 4-3 and the star has to be who you face, right? It can't be base enough that they take that into every game.
Yeah. I do think the 4-3 was really good against, or was the right idea, against Nichols, South Carolina, and even UCLA to a degree. I said this whenever they first said that they were going to the 4-3, was like, all right, well, what happens when you go against Ole Miss? What happens when you go against some of these offenses that are able to spread you out more than South Carolina was? And, you know, now I don't think they have a choice. Now I think they have to go kind of 4-2-5 as their base package. That's not to say they won't go with the Buffalo package, the 4-3 look in the future. That's not to say they won't go dime, but 4-2-5, I think, is going to be their base defense moving forward. I think that means they move Major Burns back to star. That means they've, you know, figure out who they want to start at safety, whether that's one of the fill in the blank names you have here. But I do think they go back to a 4-2-5 starting this week and kind of figure it out from there, because South Alabama is balanced enough as an offense. I know they can run the ball, but they are balanced enough as an offense to hurt you in multiple ways.
I think they'll mix it up, obviously, yeah. Depending on whom they play. They don't run a lot of nickel right now, so those are the two defensive packages they feel good about. But even star being Major Burns, he said Kylan Jackson's now the backup there and is coming along. So do we see some of him, which we haven't a lot of? I think that, and again, they said that Whit Weeks would go play Harold Perkins' position, and then West and Greg would be the guys who'd be in the middle. Be interesting to see. This weekend, I think we'll get an answer to it, because South Alabama is a little versatile. They can throw it and they can run it. So we'll at least get a taste of both of them this weekend. They said bonus favorite sipping whiskey after Tigers win. I don't drink any whiskey, so I wouldn't be a whiskey.
Well, you missed his offense question, so.
Oh, yeah, I did. Well, I'll skip right to it. I don't drink any whiskey. Honest evacuation. I think it's just evaluation. The play calling from Sloan in the offseason, I thought we'd see more creative run game, especially on the outside, and that just hasn't materialized. I don't have any issues with Sloan so far. I mean, a first-year OC with this team after transitioning as a quarterback's coach into this role seems to have gone fine. I mean, they've got to execute with this run game. They run concepts that you should be able to get yards on, and guys hit the wrong hole, don't make the block. We've talked about it, a myriad of issues. Yeah. I think if they just got the 100 yards versus UCLA last week, if they're over 100 each week and throw it like they do, I don't think anyone's got any issues with play calling.
No, it's, if they could block an inside zone, then everything would be everything would be fine, but they can't. And so they do mix it up. We've seen them pull people. Like, I've written multiple stories on the run scheme. And so I think it is far more about execution than it is about scheme or diversity of any sorts. People just get mad whenever they see inside zone not work, that they're like, why are we even running this play? Why don't we just run counter? Why don't we just run a pitch? Why don't we just go under center and have a fullback, for God's sake? Like, people just start throwing out their ideas of what a run game should look like. But ultimately, if LSU could run the inside zone, and I do think the Nussmeier keeping aspect is a valid point. But if they could just run inside zone, it would make people would be like, oh, okay, they're fine. But they can't run like the base. So it's kind of just like you want them to do everything else. But I think it's far more execution than it is of play calling, because there's like 10 running plays you can run, and they run all of them pretty much. So I don't know what else they could do.
I'll put this into some perspective for at least my end. We talked about it before the season, and I said if they had a year ago, they were the number one scoring offense in the country. It was ridiculous. They were scoring 46 points a game. You're coming back from that. But you're also not going to be the worst defense in the country like you were a year ago. So we said we needed them to be like a top 60 range defense. And then I said top 20 offense, scoring offense. You said it'd be great if they were in the top 10. But a year ago, a top by season's end. Now, granted, not all things are created equal. These are different conferences, different opponents. I get it. I'm just giving you a baseline. A top 20 offense was 34.5 points a game. A top 10 offense was 37 points a game. Right now, they are at 33.5 points per game, and they've left some out there. So let's call it an even 34. That's a top 20 defense from a year ago, or top 20 offense, scoring offense from a year ago, which is what I said they needed to be in. They're there. If they can continue to clean up some stuff, they'll be where you want them, which is a year ago, that would have been a top 10, 12 scoring offense in the country. So yeah. You can nitpick play calling play to play, but the end result for me is the reality that they have not fallen off a cliff on offense. In fact, they're within the range of what we said. If they can be here, they'll be pretty good.
SP Plus has them at number 5 on offense, which is
there you go.
Insane. I mean, that's and it makes sense when you look at the other teams in that range. It's like, okay, yeah, all these other teams do have flaws as well. And obviously,
go watch everybody else play. It ain't pretty minus two or three teams. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I've maintained like I think the top 5 or 6 or so. And again, a lot of those teams haven't even played anybody at this point. But like I think the top 5 or 6 or so are kind of set. After that, yeah, pick a team, because then you can pick a really bad flaw that they all have. So we'll see.
Let's do one more, and then we'll do another ad read. Jay Reyes, 1650. Maddie B, hope you're well. Man, a lot of people wishing us well, which is good. They know something I don't.
We're good. We're good.
About what's coming. Is it heartbreaking? He said it is heartbreaking. Losing Harold Perkins in his, quote, money year. What do you think his plan is moving forward? Jay Reyes says he thinks his best interest would be to rehab, get one more year of solid film at LSU, or is he just that elite of an athlete that he'll have a high draft stock regardless? My take on this is, we talked about this a little bit on the reaction pod, but something that Brian Kelly brought up is that Harold's family right now, the focus needs to be on surgery and then the rehab. Because for me, if you're rehabbing through the draft cycle into the draft, whatever it is, and you're not at the combine, you're not at pro day, your stock's not going to be what it could be, right? I think it puts you in a position where maybe coming back is in your best interest, maybe not even as much for film, but just to prove you're healthy, right? Like we saw Mekhi Wingo, he was a guy I thought Mike could do something like that, ended up going, but I don't know. The Mason Smith discussion was that, did he have enough film coming off of an injury? And he went pro and got drafted in the second round. So
yeah,
I think Harold's goal might be different, though. Harold's a first rounder if all the cards fall right.
Yeah. I was asked this the other day, which I think is more likely. I still think it's more likely that he goes pro as opposed to coming back. I think there, even with him coming back, I still think there are question marks of, obviously getting healthy and obviously being able to play. And then obviously, where do you play? I think if you go pro, you're just kind of done with that, and you have a team draft you as an off-ball linebacker maybe, and you just kind of go from there. You rehab and you try to get right. I don't think there's any way in which he is a first-round pick if he comes out this year. He was already dropping into the 20s a bit, and now he's not playing another game. So I could see like second-round evaluation and second-round grade on him. I think there's a chance he just takes it. Again, that's just my gut, but I think there's a chance he just kind of says, all right, second round, let's get there and let's just go play. Because I'm sure, as frustrating as for fans to see him not produce the way he's capable of, I'm sure it's frustrating for him and his family to not be producing the way he thinks he's capable of. I think it's kind of just, it might just be time, you know, for him to go to the next level, and hopefully he recovers quickly and he can maintain that explosiveness and the playmaking that we know he's capable of.
It does say a quick glance across spot track and some other things that second rounders average about $8 to $10 million across a 4-year deal. So even if you think you can be a top 50 pick, that's still pretty good money. Especially if you land in a spot that buys into, if he goes pro, Matty B, whomever's drafting him feels like they have a way to use him, because they're drafting him knowing he's coming off an ACL injury that may not make him ready for the NFL season.
Yeah. I mean, I think of like a Jamal Adams. This is going way down a rabbit hole, but I think of like that type of player that's like always in the box and just blitzing and creating havoc. Like, I would be like, man, that would be like my goal for him. I feel like in the NFL is like a Jamal Adams, who has the same measurables pretty much at like 6'1", 215, 220, like that type of player. I think a lot of people are going to buy into that in terms of teams, and I don't think he would slip out of the top 50.
All right. Let's do lottery. Final one, my perfect franchise. As we do each week, shout out to Andy Ludicky. Over at My Perfect Franchise, you can check him out at myperfectfranchise.net. But he has been with us for a few years now, at least more than two.
Yeah.
But he is the go-to guy. A lot of people in the Bengal Tiger and across the On3 network have used Andy, to dive into the world of either becoming a franchise owner or part-time franchisee, whatever it might be. He sort of takes you from you sitting there thinking about it all the way through to the finish line of making it happen. One member of the board even said, hey, look, we're about to open up a number of stores thanks to Andy. So whether it is a side hustle where you want to keep working where you're at right now, whether it's something like, hey, I want to start something for my kids, or they're getting out of college, they don't know what to do, put them in touch with Andy. Whether it's skill set, how much money you've got, how much time you've got, he walks you through all of that. None of them are stupid questions. The best part is it's 100% free to give him a call. Services completely free. And you can tell him you heard it here on the Bengal Tiger podcast, but his number 404-973-9901. You see it there on the screen. If you're on YouTube, 404-973-9901. Or email him, Andy, A-N-D-Y, at myperfectfranchise.net. Again, he has helped a ton of LSU fans out already. So he's over in Texas. Give him a shout, and no matter where you are, really. But he's got a ton of businesses that he's helped open, that he's helped oversee, that he's sort of pushed out there after training people, and is one of the best we've come across. So we continue to support him. He continues to support us, and give him a shout. My Perfect Franchise is the company. And again, myperfectfranchise.net, or email him Andy, A-N-D-Y, at myperfectfranchise.net. Okay, Matty, be a few more here. I said we'd be under an hour. I'll stick to it.
Yeah.
Nemo Addis, if Blake Baker's the DC in 2023, does LSU win a national championship? Absolutely not. And that is not a knock on Blake Baker. It's the reality of who they had on that defense.
No. You can bring Mike Ditka out as the DC or the linebacker. Nick Saban isn't making that defense a national championship winning defense. I don't care.
His other question, which freshman is your most impactful on the team through 4 weeks? And do you think that's the same answer at season's end?
Most impactful freshman.
I think the Caden Durham is going to come to mind first. He scored multiple touchdowns and what is somewhat limited amount of work he's gotten at running back. So he's got to be up there, right?
Yeah. Is he the pick? I'm trying to think if there's anybody I'm missing here.
I mean, PJ Woodland did not play a bunch the past
Spears,
2 weeks.
But he's Spears, played been out there. Against, Spears played a ton against
I think that's your other one is Deshaun Spears has now started at some games, but he's also, let me see where he's
been kind of hit or miss.
He's at 111 snaps, which is well over what Durham would have right now. And he's actually graded out pretty well. His run defense has been, I'd say, surprisingly good. Only because that's the element he had to have. He's not perfect. He's missed some, but
yeah,
he led Denham Springs in interceptions at the safety position as
coverage, you know,
set school record. He was a cover safety. It wasn't the Kylan Jackson, you know, your big hit. Like, the tackling was what he needed to add. So for him to grade out well there is a good thing. I think it's got to be Spears or Durham at this point.
I mean, Ahmad Bro's getting a lot of snaps. We saw
Dominic McKinley just got healthy, though.
Yeah, Dom just got healthy. We're seeing Gabriel Ellerford get some snaps. I think the answer is Caden Durham.
Okay.
I think Caden's the answer.
And
I don't think that changes, honestly. I think Caden Durham is going to keep getting a good amount of carries. I think he ends the year with something like 4 touchdowns, and everybody's very – oh, he's already at 3, isn't he? Like, total receiving and
rushing. Yeah, he's got a 2 rushing and 1 through the air.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. No, give me Caden Durham.
Texan Tiger 2, thoughts on a package with Swinson and Womack out there at the same time?
They have those. They have a pass rushing package. They do it, you know, with Shan's flexibility. They move him around. Womack was hurt, obviously, was that the South Carolina game. He came back in. He was in a good amount for UCLA. I don't have the snaps in front of me. But Womack, Swinson were on this field at the same time. I'm trying to remember. There was like a Relaford package with him out there. Like, they rotate pretty well on the defensive line, and I think they're really deep. So, they've definitely played together. How much? I couldn't tell you the exact number, but they have it, and they rotate a good amount.
I love both of them. I want to see, now that Womack's healthy, I want to see how he continues to progress here in year 2. Former 5-star. Bayou Tiger 96 with Kyle Parker at wide receiver, back and flashing like he did this past weekend. He caught his first career touchdown. Who is he most likely to take snaps away from at receiver? Would it be CJ Daniels? They keep a somewhat healthy rotation at receiver of the guys who play. I'll give you the count here, Matty B. Your number one receiver is not getting any snaps taken from him is Kyron Lacy. He's over 200 snaps on the year. Mm-hmm. Aaron Anderson's not getting any snaps taken away from him. He's phenomenal. He's at 131. Xavion Thomas is at 65 snaps. I'm a little surprised that number's not a little bit higher, but it's because you've got CJ Daniels. I was wrong. Kyron is not the leader right now in snaps. It is CJ Daniels, 250 that he's been on the field for. Kyle Parker 35, Jelani Watkins 8, Shelton Sampson 53. Gosh, I can't believe Shelton Sampson's played 53 snaps and Xavion Thomas has played 65. There seems to be a disparity there in what I notice when they're on the field.
There were a couple times against UCLA where they put Shelton on the field, and I was like, okay. And that's going to sound bad, but I was like, I don't think they're throwing to him in this situation. So I was like, if you're a defense, I wonder if they are kind of like, okay, why, you know, you have Lacy and Anderson on this one side of the field and you have Shelton on the other side. Like, that was the situation once. And I was like, I don't think
he got open on one where Nuss was mad at himself for not throwing it.
Yeah. No. And not to say he can't get open or make plays, but it was just like, they were putting him out there a lot. And so I was like, okay, well, they have to throw it to him at some point, but he just kind of didn't. So
I would have said the answer was no there too. It wouldn't be – the answer would not be CJ Daniels. I'm going to change that. I think the answer has to be CJ Daniels. 250 snaps. Like, someone's got to eat into that at some point, right?
Yeah. How many of those – here, I have it in front of me now. Let's see. How many of those are pass rushing – or not pass rushing?
165 in pass, 85 in run.
In run. How much does Kyron do in the run?
Same block. Split, 128 same split? Pass, yeah. 75 and run.
Okay, I thought it was going to be like, because CJ was a better run blocker or something, maybe, but no, that's the same split. Yeah, I mean, that has to be the answer then, because
Aaron Anderson, 93 and pass, 40 and run.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think CJ would be the answer. And that's not even a knock to CJ at this point.
Yeah, someone's got, I mean, that's a hefty lead over, I mean, God, beyond your offensive linemen, he and Nuss, let me think, Nuss at 275. That's about as high as you can get. There's some 279s like Miles Frazier. It's the highest I see, so that would be the most. Golly, so Kyle Parker's like top five on the team in snaps. Excuse me, CJ Daniels. So I think that would have to be the answer. No knock on CJ, just at some point you're not out there that much. They'll get other guys involved. So, and Kyle Parker's back now. He missed some games, so he's going to naturally eat into somebody's reps. I would think it'd probably be Kyle Parker's. Or, gosh, I did it again. CJ Daniels. Germans asked, how many more years till LSU's a national title contender? I think this team can compete for the playoffs next year. I think they can get in this year.
Yeah, they can get
I
in.
I think next year I would say they should be competing for the playoffs.
Yeah, if Nussmeier comes back, then definitely.
Or you have Underwood and these young quarterbacks or whatever you do in the offseason.
2020, I mean, then you're talking like 2026 is if everything goes right and you hit the portal to match the 2025 class that you've added. I mean, in theory, that should be another top 10 year. And then 2027, in theory, when all those 2025 commits are juniors, then you are really a top five team and, in theory, a national title contender. So I think that's the timeline is playoff. Hope to make the playoff this year. You hope to make it next year. Then 2026, you hope to be, you know, top 10. Then 2027, you hope to be in that title contender race.
I think the crux of this whole thing is when does the defense get better? And right now the D line's getting better and you've got some pretty good linebackers. So when do the DBs get better? Well, by next year, you will have brought along Stamps, Woodland, J.K. Johnson, Deshaun Spears, Jordan Allen, now moving into the safeties, and you're adding really elite guys. I mean, look at number one corner in the country in Pickett, someone who I think is going to be top five quarterback and a guy like Cade Phillips. So helps on the way. I mean, they've got C.J. Jim Coyley, Jace Thomas, Aiden Anding out of Ruston. We'll see who else they finish with. So I would think next year is the best year that the DBs will have had since Brian Kelly's first year when, thank goodness for Bernard Converse and Mekhi Garner coming out of the portal and really saving them in a big way. So
yeah, and I'll go next year. Had Joe Fuscia and Greg Brooks.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of players on that team.
Next year they'll be in their best spot at DB than they have been since then. And they should compete.
Yep.
Big Perp, how much does tight end's inability to block affect what we do in the run game? Do they scheme around that?
A lot. It affects a lot of what they do in the run game. I think that's why I mentioned, I think that's kind of why we haven't seen a ton of, and I don't have Pimpton's snap count for me. I think he played a little bit more in the UCLA game than the South Carolina game, but like, I think that was a very real thing coming out of the USC game and the Nichols games. Like, these tight ends kind of aren't blocking the way we hoped they could. Now, Mason Taylor's going to be on the field regardless. And I think he's been fine as a blocker in recent games. But, like, again, Pimpton and Green, if they're not blocking well, not only do you become kind of predictable, but also are you really going to put them on the field and take off Aaron Anderson or Xavion Thomas or, you know, fill in the blank here, like, or Kyle Parker, who we just talked about? And I think the answer is kind of no. So it's hard to go 12 personnel because then you're taking off really, really talented receiver weapons as well. And especially if teams are like being aggressive in the box against you, then you kind of need to spread them out anyways.
Then he said, which of the young line, so the true freshman linebackers, will get the most playing time with Perkins out? None of them have played a single snap yet. So this would be purely a guess, Matty B. You take one. You saw him on three in spring.
Well, BK, the first name BK said
Xavier Adkins.
And so out of high school, I think he was, I don't have my.
He had like 200 and something tackles.
I think he might have been my favorite of the group. I did like Devon Keyes actually quite a bit, though, out of Aledo. So.
You know, and Tylan Singleton was a really good safety linebacker coming out of Manny.
Safety, bigger guy there. So you have a good group. I think Keyes is the only one that's over like 215 pounds. So from a physicality standpoint, maybe Keyes, but Brian Kelly said Xavier Adkins first. So I guess if you want to stick with that, we can.
And then he said, is Hilton the only receiver on roster who can take the top off of defense? And how important is that moving forward? If he's wide receiver two or if he's healthy, does he just run go routes? I'll take the second part. I definitely don't think he just runs go routes. I think that they said he became sort of a refined receiver with the route tree this offseason. So, no, I don't think he'll run only go routes. But
I agree.
As to his point, do you think he is the only receiver that can take the top off a defense?
Yeah.
Kyron?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, but like Hilton is the only one. Like, for instance, the CJ Daniels deep ball that it looked like
Johnny Watkins could, if they want to put him out there, just
Johnny Watkins
run go routes. Yeah, he's going to take top off your defense.
And Aaron Anderson made some plays. But like, for instance, the CJ Daniels incompletion over the top against UCLA that it looked like Nussmeier missed by about 3 feet, you know, nothing crazy, but he missed it by about a yard in front of him or a yard or two in front of him. I left that pass saying, man, LSU's like CJ Daniels is not fast enough to get to that ball to like really burn a guy over the top. Sure, Nussmeier should have hit him, but if that's Brian Thomas, if that's, you know, fill in the blank, Chris Hilton, Kyron right. Lacy, like that's a completed pass for a touchdown. So again, Hilton has the speed that you've had last year with Thomas and Neighbors. I just don't think they have that speed outside of Hilton, and that's what makes him so important in those plays, because I think Nussmeier wants to push the ball down the field, but when you have these type like of receivers that are, I think Lacy is really good after the catch. I think Lacy is really good at being a route runner. You know, the hands I think are fine for now. He had the one drop, but he's fine. But like ultimately CJ Daniels is kind of a lumbering guy that can make plays and is big, can box people out, but he's not going to beat you over the top. I think Hilton needs to be that guy over the top with his speed. I kind of underrated maybe his value in terms of what the rest of the room is lacking in the speed department.
LSD Tiger asked, he said, look, the team's going to be in every game with a chance to pull it out with Nussbus driving. With that said, does it seem like the time to turn it over to the young guys? Are we going to see as many as 3 to 4 freshmen starting on defense by the middle of SEC play? Let's get the kids some experience and build on the talent they brought in the prior years, especially at linebacker. I think that with Harold gone, they are not going to move past the Weeks brothers and Greg Penn unless someone's getting injured.
No, that'll be 90%.
Not for any real true playing time.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, the people that have complained about, oh, well, the safeties haven't been good enough. Well, Deshaun Spears outsnaps them now and starts, and he's a true freshman. Yeah. And he's making mistakes on the fly. They also threw PJ Woodland out there, and he played for a bit. And then Corey Raymond said, hey, look, I think we're going to go with J.K. Johnson. And now J.K. Johnson's reps have gone way up. Snaps have gone up in games, and he's played solid. Even a mod, like they'll start
Ahmad
a lot
Rose of road,
but like a lot of guys play. It's almost like D tackle for me almost is.
Look, I mean,
like running back, like I don't care who starts, they all play like the same amount.
Well, what does it mean to turn it over to the young guys? Because Ahmad's playing, Deshaun's playing, PJ's playing,
Dominic McKinley's back.
Dominic McKinley's playing, Gabe Rutherford's playing. We're probably going to see a linebacker rotate in there at some point. Like, what more? Kylan Jackson's backup star now. Like, how many more young guys do we need to see the field here? Like, that's 5 true freshmen I just named getting significant snaps on this defense. They're not trying, guys. They are looking for answers here. If there's an answer, they will find it. I just don't know what turning it over to the young guys means because they're playing a lot of young guys.
Yeah, Deshaun Spears is over 100 snaps already. So, I mean, that's about as much as you're going to play for a true freshman. I'm looking at snap counts for some other true freshmen right now, and Ahmad Bros at 94, so knocking on the door of 100. Those guys are at 1. Woodland's at 37, so J.K. Johnson is really kind of – J.K. Johnson's knocking on the door of 100 at 88, so he's sort of taking that spot at corner. But Woodland, I think, just needs some time, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's probably about it, right?
That's it.
McKinley and Bro and those guys will play more, but
do we see as many as 3 to 4 freshmen starting on the defense by midseason play? I mean, Spears could start, yes.
And Bro could technically start.
Could start. I don't think PJ is going to start. I don't think Kylan or I don't think Dom's going to start. I don't think Gabe's going to start. So, no.
I think the bigger question is just playing them, which that's what they're doing. They're playing them.
They're playing them. They're playing all of them.
And maybe we see some linebackers get in. We'll see. Yeah. Last question. Misled alarm. I lied, too. We went over an hour. Damn it. Misled alarm, 92. Who do you think is the best safety on the team?
It's a hard answer. It's a hard answer. I don't love anybody in this group. I said before, Jordan Allen's been the most reliable. So, I mean, Jordan Allen maybe is my pick. I'll go with Jordan Allen. I don't think there's really a right answer here.
I think there's some real highs and lows with everyone, but I think a handful of guys do things better than Jordan Allen does. I think Jordan Allen does things more consistently across the board. Like if I'm talking run defense, tackling, covering, not busting your assignment, he for me is a more even, like across the board, like it's solid. Like I'll take it. So I would now, that's not a knock on Jordan Allen. I would just not guess he was getting this sort of playing time, let alone starting. I'd say Jordan Allen.
Yeah. Again, I don't have a great answer here because the safety spot is just really a dire position right now. So we'll see.
Last one of the mailbag. Do you think the production Swinson and Savion, your two ends, D end and edge rushers, have is sustainable barring injury? Well, 100%. They're great players. Maybe this question is about Matty B. Without Harold, was Harold Perkins doing something to draw enough attention that these guys were getting into one-on-one matchups?
I definitely think the linebackers, and we've talked about the linebackers not having a sack to this point in the year, but I do think them bringing pressure and simulating pressure and, you know, kind of occupying some blockers at times has given Swinson and Jones those one-on-one opportunities on the outside. So I don't want to dismiss the impact of the linebackers. I do think Harold Perkins is going to be missed on this defense. With that being said, I do think it is sustainable because Braden Swinson's been phenomenal and Savion has had his moments as well. So ultimately for this defense to reach, you know, now what its new ceiling is, the defensive line is going to have to be even better and continue to harass opposing quarterbacks consistently. So I think it's sustainable. We'll have to see how the rest of the defense kind of falls in line around them.
All right. There it is.
An hour and 7 minutes.
All right. Let's get out of here. We're done.
Let's get out of here. I got another story to post here. So, but
check
that's
us
it.
Out on the Bengal Tiger.
Subscribe to the Bengal Tiger on 3 if you haven't already. Follow us on Twitter, X, Instagram, all that good stuff. We post over there quite a bit, especially with graphics and everything like that. So subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. Leave us a like, comment, share, and send it to a friend and let us know what you think down below. For Shea Dixon, I'm Matthew Bruni. We'll be back previewing South Alabama game on Friday. So stay tuned for that, and we will talk to y'all then.